The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I have guests from the Assisted Acquisition Service at GSA today, Tom Howder, who heads AAS, and Chris Hamm, who heads up FedSIM. Now, we've all been hearing about FedSIM for 20, 30 years now, but most people really don't know what it does. So today we're going to talk about Assisted Acquisition Service at GSA and FedSIM, what they do, how they do it, and why it's really good for everybody in the market. So, Tom, start us off here. Give us a little background for you, please.
Hi. Thanks, Mark. We're delighted to be on the show today. My background, I've been in GSA for almost exactly 30 years now. I've been in a number of positions at GSA, including a number of directors' positions in the local telecom program. I was one of the early GWAC directors. I spent time in acquisition management, developing acquisition policy, and then I came into the Assisted Acquisition Service. So I've been in a variety of different line, as well as staff positions, pretty much tried everything in GSA over the years. Great agency to be in, and I've always been glad that I've put my whole career there.
Cool. Chris, give people your background, please.
Sure. So unlike Tom, I don't have employment options outside of my organization. I've worked at FedSIM for my entire 18-year career. It's one of those places that really allows you to work in a variety of different aspects of the federal government, supporting different customers. So I've been able to work my way through the organization without ever actually leaving the part of FedSIM that I've worked in. And so I've been there for 18 years. I'm now the director, and we've been working with Tom for about 6 years now.
Okay, so Tom's the newbie here after six. So FedSIM came over from Air Force like in 85, 86, 87, somewhere around there. And they stood up assisted acquisition as an umbrella org. So, Tom, if you would, what does AAS do?
Well, it actually does what it says it does. We provide assisted acquisition services. So clients will come to us for any variety of reasons, actually. They may not have an acquisition shop that's available to them, or they may have a particularly difficult acquisition that maybe their shop doesn't see very often and can't handle, or they just may prefer to come to us. And we will do the acquisition on their behalf for a fee, and we will do everything from a cradle to grave, everything from the development of the requirements all the way through closeout, or any piece of it that they want us to do. You know, sometimes we have clients that will just come to us to develop the statement of work or just to award it, and then they take it over. And in other cases, they really don't know how to even approach an acquisition, and we'll do everything soup to nuts for them.
Okay, so any federal agency client?
Any federal agency client can come to GSA for assisted acquisition services.
Okay. Would that include government-owned corporations like Amtrak?
No, not Amtrak. It would include those agencies that can use GSA as a source of supply and services as outlined in the GSA order.
Okay. Chris, so I said FedSIM came over from Air Force. You know, it's kind of been in the back of people's minds right. for a while, but you don't really read about it very often, so a lot of people, particularly relatively new people to the market, don't know what it is. Explain to them.
Sure. So FedSIM does have this concept of being a niche program within GSA that is not widely known. The primary reason for that is the number of customers is relatively small, and it focuses on a particular market niche. It's been for large information technology programs for the past 40 years. But there's not a wide applicability like a contract vehicle itself. It's customer focused versus vehicle focused. And so in the 80s and 90s, most of that work was supporting military clients doing high-performance computing, and then as networks evolved into local area networking, application development, and the management of that for particular technologies within the federal market space. The big thing in the connection probably within the branding for understanding where FedSIM is in AS is probably the reorganization that created the Federal Acquisition Service. That's when all of the individual parts of GSA that did assisted acquisition came together into the Assisted Acquisition Service. So it's been around, consolidated in an organization for about 10 years now. And that's when the understanding that you could come to GSA and do assisted acquisition where GSA would be the contracting authority, that's when the program really took off. And so the size of the work delivered from FedSIM and then through the larger AS organization started to get to numbers that were significant, measured in the, you know, in the billions versus millions. And so that's when you're starting to get more recognition that there's a service offering that's available government-wide that, that people who can't seem to execute their contract activity could come and get assistance.
Okay. So is it safe to assume your name recognition and use recognition is much higher with the federal IT and contracting community than it would be with the vendor contracting community?
Very much so. And the underlying rationale is our customers are the people that we're going to communicate with. There's not a lot of external marketing to GSA to the vendor community because the vendor community isn't using the service. The government is using the service. So our marketing and outreach is directly to the 1102 community within acquisition and then to the individual programs throughout the military and civilian markets that this is a service offering when they're unable to get their acquisitions executed.
Yeah. Last time I looked, the 1102 group on LinkedIn had about 8,000 members. So they're even there. And they always turn off parts of their profiles so you can't see what they do or they should. All right. So current initiatives, what are you guys doing now that would be of interest to the vendor community? Tom, you want to take lead on this one?
Oh, we've got so much going on right now. Our pipeline is actually quite full. I would think that certainly you're seeing a lot of activity in the cyber world. Everything cyber right now is coming to us. Traditionally, everything we had provided before was in the IT arena. We're seeing increasingly that it's focusing on professional services. So a few years ago, where almost everything we did was IT, I'd say it's closer now, a 50-50 split between IT and professional services requirements that are coming to us.
Okay. On the professional services side, are we talking, again, you know, like typical management services, IT services? Are you getting into the AEC side? Is it across the board?
I'd say it's pretty much across the board. Chris, you probably have some good examples that would help illustrate that.
Yeah, historically, to do professional services, you'd be using the different GSA schedule offerings, like the MOBIS, PES, and LogWorld contracts. And so the scope of those contracts would be around the domain and the vendors that are supporting that kind of work. The biggest difference is probably the creation of the OASIS and the OASIS small business contract. That opened up the market aperture to a variety of different professional services based on the underlying NAICS codes. And that's when DOD really started to look to not just using the contract vehicle, but also seek assistance for the broader spectrum of professional services. And so there's just been a massive uptick around the country of outsourced acquisitions through AS under OASIS.
Okay. Now, OASIS got major attention early on with a task order that approached $1 billion. You know, that's what the trade pubs, you know, we have money here. That's sex. And you know, we're not Hollywood. No sex stuff. Big money is it. And $1 billion task order, it was actually, what, 972
yep.
million. Pocket change, right? But wow. Are we going to see more task orders along this line? What's happening on the small biz side of OASIS? I mean, I had Todd in a while ago, but give me your slant.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of very large requirements coming to OASIS. We have a number of them in the pipeline and in the works. For us, OASIS was a game changer. Before that, we didn't really have a place to go for that kind of requirement. We'd have to go open market. So to have OASIS available to us has frankly just changed the dynamic considerably for us. That's not to say there aren't opportunities for smaller Oasis buys as well. Remember, we have 12 different client support centers. So FEDSIM, of course, is the largest one, and they're getting the largest, most complex acquisitions. However, we have a lot of other locations. We have the 12 locations in the regions, and they handle a whole variety of different sizes of acquisitions, including small business acquisitions that are going to Oasis as well as other vehicles.
Right, and the underlying program itself, Oasis and Oasis Small Business, you can order under that directly from a customer, or you could use an assisted acquisition. The numbers are pretty clear down the middle, or whether or not customers are able to use the vehicle themselves versus getting assistance. And what you're seeing, particularly throughout DoD, the Air Force in particular, heavy utilization of Oasis Small Business as the primary means for getting professional services.
Cool.
What you're getting out of, largely out of FEDSIM, is the large side of a service offering, particularly when there's something that's coming out of a COCOM, combatant command, where there's a joint activity. That contract structure allows you to do cost-plus award fee or cost-plus incentive fee with a lot of post-award purchasing of tools. And that's the element that wasn't able to be executed under the GSA schedule program. So under the large FEDSIM orders, the one that was almost $1 billion, that's a multiple command project for global threat messaging that's going to be worldwide support against against global threats. That was the largest Oasis task order until we awarded a second one. There is now a much larger task order. There's an award that we made that was $1.7 billion for the Joint Improvised Threat Defeat Organization. And so we followed up the billion with $1.7 billion. And then in the last 6 months, we've awarded one $800 million task order and another $550 million task order, and there are several in the works that are in that range. So that's telling you that the market space for Oasis task orders to do large military operations under professional services is an ongoing need that will continue to see significant growth, particularly out of FEDSIM, but also throughout the AS regions.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Mr. Howder and Mr. Hamm right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Chris Hamm of FEDSIM, part of Assisted Acquisition Service, and Tom Howder, who heads the Assisted Acquisition Service. Chris, I want to follow up with that. So when we're talking about task orders of this size and you know, the global threat messaging, those issues, these are pressing issues. So do acquisitions, these task orders, allow these agencies to access things faster?
Very much so. And I think that's the foundational argument for using existing contracts. When conducting an acquisition in the federal government, you're complying with the federal acquisition regulations. So when you're starting new and you're doing a full and open competition, particularly if you're envisioning multiple awards, the time frame to take that it would take in order to do that kind of acquisition activity often exceeds 1 year. In many activities, particularly in the Department of Defense, it'll take more than 2 years.
And if there's a protest?
And then it will take however long it takes to resolve the protest. And so at some point, when you're talking, you're measuring not in months, but in years, you're talking about the mission potentially being jeopardized by not having the right underlying support contractors and the right technical environment to be able to deliver the underlying thing, particularly for Homeland and for DoD. And so if you're caught in a large and a long acquisition cycle and you're caught in a protest, then you're not able to execute. One thing that I've probably never been more wrong about was the difference that Oasis was going to make for the Department of Defense. I thought it would be a replacement for, you know, small dollar transactional work for MOBIS, PEZ, and LogWorld. And it's turned out to not have any impact on those orders. Instead, it's taking over a lot of what you're seeing in the defense market that was originally full and open competition. There weren't government-wide vehicles, multi-agency contracts for professional services. So any large program to support any DoD activity was taking over a year or 2 years in order to get from start into award. And most of the Oasis task orders are running in this 6 to 7 month time frame. So you're able to do 3 transactions under Oasis where it would take you to do 1 under a full and open. So you're automatically saving a massive amount of time and energy in the acquisition process.
And if I could add just a little bit to that, we're so enamored of these different either GWACs or IDIQ contracts that more than 90% of our business volume goes through them, either Alliant or Oasis or the Schedules program. Very little of what we do now is open market, is single digits.
Okay. And, you know, the others, the NITAC program, formerly under Rob Cohn, and Joanne over at Soup has been exemplary in not only execution, but growing the programs as well. I think Soup did almost or about $4 billion in FY16, which is absolutely cool. But it's also, from my perspective, the best run GWAC, period. Of course, she's been doing it for a while. So any other initiatives you want to talk about before I migrate here?
Well, talking about the enterprising programs that run GWACs and MACs, in general, there's this concept that there's some sort of competition between the different programs. And that's really a false dichotomy. The primary emphasis from GSA and from these other programs is to expedite ordering. And the market share that we're all trying to go after is the full and open, long-term duration kind of contract. You know, you can do your awards under the GSA Schedule program, under Alliant, under Oasis, under NITAC's vehicles, under NASA's vehicles. The goal is to get the work done so that the government can deliver its mission. And anything that's being done under a full and open contract that exists under a GWAC or a MAC, I simply don't understand the mentality. The ability to execute rapidly where somebody has already done the mechanical aspects of creating labor categories and rates and terms and conditions and compliance, that's the reason for those programs to exist. And so you should simply be looking whether or not it exists under an existing contract first.
Yeah, I know Casey has been particularly paying attention to going to agencies and explaining the value of Alliant. And getting people to sign, you know, letters of intent to use the vehicle. So, when an agency comes to you, do you help them in that process as well, Tom?
Sure, absolutely. What we do is we sit down with them and we discuss their requirements. We don't have any preconceived notion in terms of what vehicle is going to be used. They may express a preference to us. We may push back on that or not, depending on where the requirements lead us. Certainly, we have a familiarity with the GSA vehicles, whether it's Alliant, whether it's Oasis, or whether it's Schedules. And so naturally, we're going to want to look at those first. Sometimes we do use other agency vehicles if a customer is required to use them. Sometimes, on very rare occasions, we'll even go open market. But we really want to go where the requirements lead us. We want to find the vehicles that is going to work best for that particular client. And that's the way we try to steer the acquisition.
You have thoughts on that one?
And so, yes, we're vehicle agnostic. Okay. It just so happens that we sit inside of GSA, and GSA makes some really, really good vehicles. And FedSim in particular, we're probably the largest contract, we are the largest contract in activity ordering against the IT vehicles. We're the largest single office that awards against Alliant. We're probably the single largest ordering activity against the GSA Schedule program. We're definitely the largest ordering activity against Oasis. And so design-wise, we find those vehicles have a very, very low fee. They have the vendor market that meets the underlying requirements. And in general, they're executing in a way that the performance gets positive results. That is true in other vehicles, but we have found that the GSA vehicles have been superior for our requirements.
Okay. Well, I know that NITAC and Soup from the outside view, it looked like a price war going on there for a while. You know, who can go low? But, you know, they're both not for profit.
Right.
So they aren't cutting it to beat one another. They're cutting it because they can't use the extra money anyway.
And while we're on the topic of fees, it's one of those concepts that people like to point at, whether or not a fee is a tenth of a percent or 0.75%, or even on the AS side, our assistance and whatever that percentage is, you're not measuring the true cost to the government. The inefficiency of doing a multi-year long acquisition costs in terms of the direct people that are working on that project, mm-hmm. and the lack of success on the mission itself. And so when we're arguing over fractions of a percent on whether or not one versus another, that's a false argument. You should be talking about what's the value to the government for doing the acquisition itself, and what's the outcome, and how much money are you saving by using the existing vehicles, regardless of what vehicle you're using.
Well, this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you guys in here, because you represent an institutional knowledge throughout government, every agency, that helps people expedite these processes, spend money wisely, you know, improve their FITARA grade if that's what they're going for, not usually at the top of the list, but certainly gravy at the end or icing on the cake.
Right.
But, you know, the simple fact that this institutional knowledge is gathered in assisted acquisition service is pretty damn cool.
Yeah. So the AS service offering is a unique service offering in the government. So people come because of the name of the organization, the Assisted Acquisition Service. But they're not just getting the acquisition. They're also getting financial management, contractual compliance, and post-award project management. So they're getting this entire wrapper around compliance. Every dollar that flows through the system is audited and tracked and spent properly. And so any time that there's going to be an action that you want to make sure that the money was used within its period of availability, we can demonstrate that using our systems. Anytime you want to demonstrate that we achieved an outcome, we can show you the CPAR's record for what was delivered under that, because we're the people that are entering that information into the system and demonstrating that every aspect of the acquisition got what it was paid for. So you get an overall level of professionalism in contract administration to make sure that the government's getting its outcome that you were seeking originally.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and on top of that, I'd like to say that really our focus is on the quality. Now, we do acquisition, I think, as well, if not better than most shops. But we're not really concentrating on getting the fastest acquisition out there or the cheapest acquisition. We really want to make sure that we get it right. And so that's where we focus our attention. And we have a huge number of management controls in place. As Chris mentioned, we have systems controls in place. We track the finances. Even if we have requirements where the finances are coming in from 15 different sources, we're able to track that, make sure that they're all accounted for correctly. That's in addition to putting in place a solid acquisition. So it really does come as quite a nice package that we provide to our clients.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This show's worth listening to again, so you can go to federalnewsradio.com, search on AmTower. My shows will come up. Just look for the AAS FedSim show. Download it, listen to it again. This is valuable stuff. So just do it, because I said so. So what's keeping you guys up at night? You know, how do these things like CDM bubble up to the top? And is there traction for smalls here?
Yeah. So what keeps me up is the issue of scalability. We've been tremendously successful over the past several years, and we've been growing at a rather healthy clip. We focus on quality, and how do you make sure that you maintain that level of quality and consistency as you get larger and larger? And so that's really one of the things that I've been grappling with in the last couple of years especially. So last year, we did hit about $4.8 billion in revenue. We're probably going to be above $5 billion this year. And that's across about 1,000 orders that we did on behalf of clients last year. Spread amongst 12 different client support centers all across the country, the 11 regions plus FedSim. So it's becoming a very large enterprise, and we are focusing on how do we make sure that we keep that client experience consistent, how do we maintain that level of quality. In terms of the small business spend, I would say that over the last 3 years, we've probably put about $4 billion worth of revenue into the hands of small businesses, which, you know, I think is pretty remarkable. So we do the very large and complex, and we do a lot of much smaller acquisitions, and we're supporting, I think, all facets of the industry, whether they're large or whether they're the smalls.
So to echo Tom's concern, obviously resourcing is going to be an ongoing challenge in the federal government. And whenever you see any sort of changes, regardless of what sort of budget outcome that we have, the ability for AS to provide support to the rest of the federal government seems like there's just going to be an ever-increasing demand. The amount of customers that need to have acquisition expertise will continue, and so we'd like to be able to scale and continue to support them. At FedSIM particularly, one of the bigger challenges that keeps me up at night is the impact on protests that it will have on our ability to do acquisitions. We have a very solid reputation for delivering consistent acquisition quality and successfully defending ourselves if there were protests. But the act of protesting does delay acquisition activity by default.
Yeah.
And so even if you're successful and do everything right, there is an impact materially to the customer's mission and to the resourcing on our side, where we'll end up having to allocate contracting officers and lawyers to defend that could be working on more programs for the federal government. So it would be advantageous to see an offset of the cost and impacts that protests have throughout the process. That's a regulatory thing.
Okay, so let's follow up there just a sec. Did you guys help Alliant set up that prelim checklist, if you will, that they use for the awarding?
So we can't take direct credit. The foundation for the vehicles and creation of GSA, FedSIM and AS historically were involved in the 90s, but those programs moved over to different parts of GSA. Mm-hmm. And the underlying concept for self-scoring and the new technical evaluation methodologies to create vehicles were really tested under OASIS and the HCATS vehicle and informed what was done under Alliant too. But overall, anyone in government, if you're creating a multi-board IDIQ structure, those three solicitations should be your pick list for how you design to award something and get through any resulting protest.
Okay, so I want to get to back to the CDM issue. Right. You worked with Federal Acquisition to build this BPA, but how do issues like this bubble up to the surface? How do they get your attention, and how do you decide which vehicle or vehicles to try to leverage to provide the necessary services to the federal agencies to combat, you know, something as weird as CDM?
Right.
Weird because, you know, some of it's malicious, some of it's just stupid, and, you know.
So as a federal employee, my information was accidentally released in the OPM hack, so I have a vested personal interest in making sure that government networks are secure. Prior to that being public knowledge, there was obvious concern throughout the federal government that we needed...
I found you.
Yeah, we needed to secure the networks. Homeland Security has responsibility for that infrastructure and was appropriated early on to create the Continuous Diagnostic and Monitoring Program. So CDM was an initiative that originally John Stroyfert was responsible for, and John Stroyfert was a longtime customer of FedSIM's acquisition services. So instead of us talking to John about what we could potentially do for him, the conversation went in the opposite direction. John called us and said, "You're going to do this program." And we said, okay.
So it bubbled up the service real quick.
And that happens actually somewhat frequently for high-profile projects that are going to be complex. That's when you should be seeking advice and a broker from somebody who does that kind of acquisition regularly. For CDM, the design of it was pretty clear from the requirements when we first spoke to Mr. Stroyfert. They wanted to have a government-wide vehicle that any federal or state or local activity could order off of. There are very few of those. The GSA Schedule Program is one of those. And it also, by its very nature, has the ability to add products on a rolling basis. And so we know that any sort of cybersecurity solution, whether or not it's going to be identity management or it's going to be specific devices on the network, whatever we're going to use next year hasn't been invented yet.
Yeah.
It's not commercially sold yet. So you need to have the ability to add those products. So the Schedule Program, by its very nature, is the logical place for any sort of government-wide solution that's going to be around cybersecurity. When we first did it, the design was to create a blanket purchase agreement. So we issued a solicitation out for $6 billion, open to the entire federal market, to allow people who provide products and services to get onto the BPA and then do rolling additions for each of the phases to be able to solve whatever the next challenge would be. One of the beautiful things about the Homeland Security Program is it's centrally appropriated, And so DHS was able to drive a consistent pricing set for delivery of the consistent product set throughout each of the federal agencies. So when you have one buyer with one line of accounting trying to deliver network solutions, you get massive discounts. It's the best version of a strategic solution because you're going to get one delivery throughout the entire federal government. So the pricing that we're seeing under CDM exceeds anything that we've seen discount-wise off of any other product solution that we've ever done. So the nice thing about the BPA is that anybody can use it, and it's going to be available for the next year and a half. The conversation that you're seeing now in the news is that GSA is going to move from a blanket purchase agreement solution to a special item number, a SIN. And that's a reflection of the scalability of this to not just the CDM program, but to all cybersecurity solutions. You'll want Homeland Security to vet the individual products that are approved within all federal networks. And then when anyone else wants to add capability, they'll be able to go and order that directly through the schedule program. So you'll see that shift where there'll be a solicitation put under the special item number for Schedule 70 for CDM, and then everyone will be able to continue to order that without having to be on the BPA in the first place.
Cool. And if you want information on this, Bloomberg government did a report on the CDM program. I wrote about it last week in Federal Computer Week. So go to fcw.com, search on AmTower, and the first thing that will pop up is my article on CDM. I don't know that I highlight your role there, but I reference the Bloomberg piece, which does. But 10 vehicles are being used for that. The top two or three vehicles are the main ones being used. So CDM, SOUP, and I believe the VA contract was number three.
Yep.
Yeah. So
an interesting point. Chris talked about how the opportunity bubbled up to him, and he said he basically got the phone call from the client. That's actually a typical story. We don't go out and advertise like you'd see typically in some agencies that provide services. It's almost all word of mouth. It's almost all repeat business. So we're kind of under the radar in a lot of regards. We have this list of very satisfied clients, and they keep coming back to us and coming back to us and bringing more and more complex requirements. And so we've been very successful with that model so far.
Yeah. But, you know, an issue like CDM, FISEA, the Federal Information Systems Educators Association, every year talks about this at their annual conference. So it's a NIST-based group with members from every federal agency, and they get together once a year to talk about how to train people inside agencies. They've been doing this for 15, 20 years, just a single issue, and it keeps growing. So it's just everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's not just government. You know, anybody ever get any emails saying, you know, I have your $8 billion here from Africa. Give me a call.
I actually just took GSA's insider threat training yesterday. It's one of those, you know, ones that everybody in the federal government does. And so there's all sorts of aspects to cybersecurity. And that's why you're seeing solutions that are sometimes product-based and sometimes service-based. You've got to make sure that you're accounting for who's accessing the network, what's on the network, and then what are people doing on the network. And so that's why CDM has multiple phases, because ultimately you have to solve all those challenges. You know, even if everything is secure and I click on that link and expose something, then I'm the risk factor. So, you know, as a design feature, anybody that's associated with cybersecurity should just think that this is not going to stop. We're going to keep developing new products and new tools, but the incentives are there for continued attacks. And so you're not going, it's a market space that if I were starting a new company today, I might focus on.
There you go. Straight from the horse's mouth. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm here today with Tom Howder, who is the, what's the official? Are you director of AAS? Assistant Commissioner of the Assisted Acquisition Service. And Chris Hamm, who, I'm just going to give you a title, he runs FedSIM, which is part of AAS. So a lot of the things you guys do are actually pretty innovative. Which leads me to question why DOD and 18, I won't go there. But so what kinds of things are you doing now, and what do you see, and how is industry playing here?
Well, first of all, you know, let me take a step back, and I think that the reason why we're innovative is because we have to be. You know, as a fee-for-service organization, we're constantly having to improve ourselves so we can demonstrate value to our clients. And so in that regard, we do have a number of innovative things going on with the way we're approaching our acquisitions. I can point to it, for example, with our Region 3 in Philadelphia. They've put in a number of techniques that are starting to spread throughout our organization. There are things such as the comparative analysis technique for the acquisitions. So we're continuously trying to find ways to improve our processes, trying to find ways to reduce our PALT times. And as part of that, you know, industry does play a big role in that. We're continuously communicating with industry, whether it's through the various associations or whether it's through things like the Alliant and OASIS PMRs. And we also have some initiatives that are going on internally. For example, FedSIM has recently stood up interface with industry that's more direct than we have in the past. And Chris, I think you could probably elaborate on that a little bit more.
So in terms of working with industry and trying to be innovative, it's something that FedSIM has done for several decades in terms of the interaction directly with suppliers to understand how things are sold and then how they can best be implemented within the federal government. And so when you start talking about innovation, I should break it up into two different categories. There's innovation within the rules today based on the rules that are in the rule book versus culture and perception. And then there's actually driving change. A lot of the things that FedSIM has historically done aren't really innovative. They're allowable in the rules as is, but for some reason they're not executed throughout the government. For example, taking ordering under a GWAC or a MAC. You do that under FAR Part 16. It's 16505. When you're doing ordering under an existing vehicle, it's faster. The amount of information you need to put into forming a contract is about half as much as when you're starting over. And so you can do innovative evaluation methodologies within there, like oral presentations or interviews that are shorter in duration than if it were a written proposal where you sequester people in rooms for weeks or months to do the evaluation to pick the lowest price. Everything that we do there is perfectly allowable and would just increase the throughput of an acquisition activity that everybody in the government should do. So it's not necessarily innovative. It's just picking the right design feature for doing an acquisition. When you get past that, then you start talking about true innovation. You talk about finding ways that there's not explicit regulations and there's not case law to try and drive change. And so there's a lot of topics within the federal government around how to disrupt and get through the long acquisition slog. And so you'll see new regulations around how DOD is using other transaction authority, how GSA is doing broad agency announcements, and how they're trying to drive change. I was fortunate enough to be named one of GSA's two acquisition innovation advocates. And so there are things that when we need to change regulation or seek deviations, we can then use that as a test bed. And so if we wanted to do something that were to expedite an ordering process and it would change one of our internal regulations or the FAR, we seek relief and communicate with that with all of the other members of the acquisition community on how we could do something that would be faster or create a better outcome.
Okay, so is that a temporary reprieve or is that go chapter and verse?
It's time limited for the pilot.
Okay. Specific program.
If you wanted to do something that was going to, if you're automatically going to set aside a procurement for small business, there's a form that you fill out. If that form takes time, but you're already giving it to small business, let's relieve the requirement to submit that form and it cuts out a day or two. And so let's test and see whether or not that the outcome is faster, costs less, and still gets the money to small business. And so you'll do that test for, say, a fiscal year and compare it against all of your other acquisitions. And then if it makes sense, then you use that to inform a suggested change to a regulation.
You have thoughts on that one, Tom?
I've just echo what Chris says. FedSIM in particular has been very proactive in terms of looking at both the flexibilities that are in the FAR as well as driving that true innovation. And so I think you're going to see a number of things on FedSIM acquisitions as those RFPs come out that truly are, do look a little bit different than what folks have typically seen before in the past. But it's because we're trying to push the boundaries a little bit and test the waters and see what innovation we can drive to our customers.
Okay. So I want to touch on the partnership you have with industry here a bit. What exactly is this, and what feedback are you seeking from them, and what do you get?
So in FedSIM in particular, we are doing orders under large vehicles. And so the supplier community is pretty consistent. If you're working under Alliant, you know who those vendors are. If you're working under Alliant Small Business or Oasis Small Business, you know who those vendors are. And so instead of having this episodic interaction with them, like every 6 months when there's a program management review, since we're the largest ordering activity, it's not vehicle specific. It's based on our template for our solicitation. What are we doing when we do a solicitation that costs money to industry? If we have, and one of the nice things about FedSIM and NAS is you're using the same format over and over and over again, but there may be unintended consequences. If we put something out on a certain date and ask for it back, you know, 7 days later, does that impact your ability to bid or not? Does that cost you additional money or not to get, you know, overnight printing and delivery through FedEx? If we do this and we ask for named key personnel, what's the material impact to your company and whether or not it would harm your ability to submit a response? So we're creating an ability to provide feedback to our basic procedures that will then help them decide whether or not they should be bidding or not bidding, and then what drives cost in their bidding process. And so there's an advisory council where all of these concepts are submitted out all to industry, and then they can weigh in on whether or not if we make subtle changes, does it improve their ability to compete or improve their ability to say, no, we shouldn't compete. We're not going to put our money in BNP into that acquisition. We'll put it into another one. So we want to create a supplier relationship where people communicate the way that they have, you know, evolved to communicate in person, explaining things where you actually get to talk to a real government person. And then once we decide what the motivators are, how we can change our procedures.
Okay. Now, may I assume there's both large and small in there?
Most of the individual topic areas have a chair and a co-chair where there's a large vendor and a small vendor that are coordinating. And then the requirements will be different depending on whether or not we're talking about, let's say, a cost contract that's largely only going to impact a large business
right.
versus a small business.
Right. And I'm assuming some of the answers might differ according to the size of the business.
Yes. Yeah. One example would be for large FedSIM acquisitions, we'll do either oral presentations or video submissions. And so a video submission is an additional cost. It applies largely to large business, but we want to know whether or not small businesses want to consider that. It could be more expensive because of the production value, or it could be less expensive because you could record that with, you know, modern commercial tools, and you wouldn't have to travel to Washington, D.C. to do an oral presentation. So we'll make assumptions that small businesses don't want a video submission unless, in this one particular case, everyone advocates for it. So we need to understand what are the motivators on between the suppliers.
Yeah, not necessarily something you want to do on your cell phone.
Right.
So, final thoughts, please, Tom.
Well, final thought is that I appreciate being here today. AAS doesn't get a lot of publicity, generally speaking. We're pretty much a behind the scenes organization. When we work on a very large acquisition, generally we're doing it on behalf of a client, and the client, of course, is going to be the one that publicized that it gets done. And so we want them to have the credit for that. We want to be behind the scenes. And so it's nice every once in a while for us to be able to speak to a larger audience. And so we really appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Glad to have you.
In terms of FedSIM and what I think the final message really is, the work that we do for the federal government is important. I mean, we're enabling, you know, particular DoD missions for warfighters, you know, the civilian, you know, security of all the networks and classified communication. The work is very, very important. And yet there's thousands of people in the community that are focused on doing bureaucracy and paperwork and trying to divine the government's intent. There's a better way to do all of this. And so we want to be the efficient broker that gets acquisitions done, you know, fully compliant, but as fast as possible so that we can get back to doing the business of government so that people who are responsible for government can actually get outcomes.
There you go.
That's the goal.
Greatly appreciate both you guys coming in. I appreciate your time and the information shared. This is not my day job. I advise companies on the marketing side of selling from GWACs, IDIQs, leveraging social, but getting in front of the right people in government with the right messages. Drop me a line, markamtower@gmail.com. Look me up on LinkedIn. And thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.